The Survivor Specialist Phil and Blake are back, and today we are digging deeper into episode number 10 of Survivor Season 50. We are joined by Steven from Survivor 49. We are going to be breaking down everything from this crazy episode. Blake, we just got to start with you. We normally you start with the guests, but not on a day.
Before we do anything, how do you say your last name? Because we keep going back and forth.
Okay, what are the two variations you guys are toying back and forth with?
Ram, like or the LA Rams, or Rom. Okay. Like 1980s trying to figure out how I'm going to store stuff on a computer.
Dude, that's so funny. That extra M really throws people off, but it's Ram. Yeah.
Cool.
I've had so many professors and teachers. They're like, where's Mr. Rom? And I'm like, who the hell is that?
It's funny. There's no H, there's no O, but we all just assume somehow it became Rom. Don't know why, but cool.
Ram it.
Blake, don't change the subject at hand, Blake. You started off not with a very Stephanie slow LaGrosa motion dance.
Hawkins Perkins, whatever her last name is. It was. I think it's something where it's been fun to be cheering for the heel a little bit, and then boy, did that person, Miss Gross Boys herself, probably one of the worst episodes of all time. How are you going to get gagged by multiple people at that tribal of like multiple people saying, "Why would you do this?" And Stephanie goes, oh. And then, why would you do this? And then Stephanie goes, oh. And then Stephanie's like, well, it wasn't me. And then Rizzo's like, it should be you, because what's the freaking point of playing if it's not going to be you? And Stephanie said, oh. And she had three too many. And then she was out of breath and she was gone. And it was something where you're like, does that even move the game forward? Or is it kind of like we just got somebody that was she an obstacle? Was she a winner? Did she have a real chance to go far? Or was she just clouding the murky waters, and now it's more clear of who's going to take over?
Steven, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. This is a dream come true, honestly. I watched a lot of your stuff prepping for 49. Big fan. So it's kind of surreal being here talking to you guys. And yeah, it's a great episode to be commenting on, because that was one of the most entertaining tribal councils I can remember. And I was just having a blast the whole time. I thought the cameo with Mr. Beast was actually really well done compared to what I think the expectations were. So I'm excited to dig into this episode. I think it was a great one and a lot of stuff to talk on. And yeah, dude, Blake, I feel you, man. I had some secondhand embarrassment watching some of those things unfold with Stephanie. I was like, oh. No. I was like, oh man, rookie mistake after rookie mistake.
I'm
from a vet.
My vote stealer to vote wrong twice. Like, and could not have stubbed her toe harder last night. Yeah.
I mean, worst of all, nobody voted with her. Jonathan, Joe didn't vote with her. And Steven, you played with Rizzo. Since when does he get aggressive at tribal council? Like, all of a sudden, Stephanie had such a bad episode last night that Rizzo is being like, what's wrong with you? And I don't feel like he does that at tribal council. Am I wrong?
You know, he's a lot more aggressive, I think, than people give him credit for. He's a pit bull sometimes. And there were moments, I don't know if all of them made the edit, but I'll never forget the first big tribal council we went to on 49 after the merge, when everyone's there. And I had only been to one tribal council before, and it was with Sage and Jawan and Shannon, much more timid voices in comparison to some of the bigger ones. And Uli came out, man. They were firing. They were swinging. And Rizzo was one of those people that I just wasn't expecting him to be that, you know, and they came out. Yeah, he came out hard. And I remember kind of feeling a little bit like I was on my back heel, even though I went into that tribal council feeling extremely confident that I was safe and I had the votes with me. Rizzo did a good job making me doubt the plan that I knew was going forward. So, I mean, to give credit where credit's due, maybe it wasn't quite as aggro as it was last night, but I loved that he called Stephanie out. I couldn't agree more with how he framed it. And Rizzo's always been that type of player where he's like, come on, let's just brass tacks. We all know that you're throwing my name out, or names are being thrown out, like quit pretending. Part of it's probably strategy to get you to spill more than you want. Part of it's just like, dude, if you're not going to be honest with me, I'm not going to be honest with you. It's a two-way street. And so I like that approach. I thought that was a really, really good tribal council for him, and just in general. So yeah. What'd you guys think?
I mean, I feel like that tribal council again, like Stephanie ended up coming out so bad, but I was impressed that Rizzo was saying that and saying that so openly in front of every other player who's there. Just saying, like, you should be throwing names out. That's what Survivor's about. And then I started thinking, like, what names has Rizzo thrown out this season? And really the one that comes to mind is just Charlie. And that was obviously a big moment for him and kind of when he started to align with some people like Suri, that have been alliances that have really worked for him. My question, though, is, and I'm going to start with Steven and then I'll go to Blake because it's the same question. Was Rick Devens ever in danger of going home at this tribal council aside from flipping the coin? Were they going to vote for him or was Stephanie always the boot here?
My impression was that Devens was going to be the vote. I think he was the easy vote. He came out swinging right away and started airing out everyone's dirty laundry, trying to create as much chaos. To me, that gives off the impression of someone that feels like they have nothing to lose. They want to go out guns blazing. He brought out the bazooka. He was firing it. I loved it. I was sitting there like, oh, this is what tribal council is about, calling people out, putting people on blast. And yeah, I think if someone was not expecting to get, or if someone was expecting to be safe, they might play it a little safer because you got to go back to camp with these folks afterwards. And you just burned so many bridges. I mean, those bridges might have already been burned going into tribal, you know, my impression, at least from my read, was I think Devens felt like the easy vote that everyone was going to default to. And then when he ended up flipping that coin, the balls on that guy, I loved it. I think that caused a big scramble. I think they had backup plans, but that was my impression. I mean, Blake, what do you think?
I was going to go I'm looking at these 10 votes and it is kind of like, I think Suri and Ozzy are like, Suri, Ozzy, Rizzo are like, oh my gosh, we can't lose Ozzy. And that's who they were going after. Or is it going to default to Rick? I think when we went there to when we went to tribal, was he going to go home? I think there was the thought process of, let's not vote out Rick because he is the smokescreen, and that everyone kind of agreed on that. And it was kind of like, who's going to be the one that actually goes? Is it going to be Ozzy? Is it going to be Stephanie? And whenever you look at these votes, I think there's at least five people that would be on Rick Devin's side, even before he does the whole, like, guys, let me literally count for you guys. Like, as long as you're not Joe, Jonathan, or Steph, why are you not working with me right now? And I think we're watching Second Chances right now in our other thing that we do. And it is kind of like, oh, the voting blocks of three. And it's like, here's your three, here's your three, here's your three. And then I think even at one point he was like, I'm going to say all this, and the only person I'm not going to say their name is Aubrey. And I don't even know if he realized that he didn't say Aubrey's name. I'm sure Aubrey realized that he didn't say her name, but like, here's a trio, here's a trio, here's a trio. And then Aubrey is like a floater and for all of that. And it's like, I do think the two trios would rather vote out a Stephanie, a Jonathan, or a Joe. But then you look at it and it's like, Joe hasn't got a single vote and Jonathan hasn't got a single vote. And that is with all the votes that have been around, because there's 24 players on this season. That's kind of crazy that at final nine, there's just two people left with no that have a chance at a perfect game. No scars on them is what I was trying to say in my head 3 minutes ago. But it's something where I think Rick would have been fine. And I think Rick spelling it out made it even more fine. I think Rick just couldn't help himself. And he doesn't have someone like Suri being like, no, don't do it. We need you. It's almost the opposite of like, yeah, Rick, pop off, King. And whenever Rick does do that, I thought the most interesting moment was when Ozzy was like, he just made us $1 million. Like, whether you like him or not, like, you kind of have to, like, not take him to the final three, but you can't, like, screw this guy. He's a real piece of work. Like, he made one of you guys $1 million more, or maybe Rick. And I think that was something whenever I'm probably going to be a little bit down on Joe, because I used to love Joe. And I think some people are like, I ironically like Joe now. And I think I don't know if it was ironic last time.
It wasn't.
But Joe, this time around, I'm like, I feel like he'd go to a baseball game and be like, why is he striking him out, bro? Let this guy hit a homer. And you're like, bro, this is what baseball is all about. people are going to try and strike you out. And whenever you have a full count and you're like, bro, why aren't you throwing in the dirt? It's like, this is how the game is played, brother. And having Joe be sour at every level of it was insane last night.
Yeah, you could taste the salt. I think my blood pressure rose from all the sodium that was just coming through the screen at times. I agree. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a reason why I think Jonathan and Joe are not catching strays or not catching votes. I think at least the impression I'm getting from the way people are acting and voting doesn't give the impression that they view those two as a big threat. Mm-hmm. And so, but you bring up a really good point, Blake. I mean, using Devin's as a smokescreen, you know, is a great strategy. You always have someone bigger in front of you who has a bit of a resume that if they make it to the end, they've got some talking points. So people are going to be gunning for him. So why not let him live another day? And then that's someone that you can take out later and get rid of maybe someone that's more of a floater. That's kind of just made a couple mistakes, rubbed the wrong person the wrong way, just said the wrong name to the wrong person. So yeah, I feel you.
Yeah. And my thing with the whole way that shook out with Devin's, normally I would agree, Stephen, when you first answered, you said, well, his back seemed like it was really against the wall, but then that was the case 2 weeks ago too. And it seemed like he kind of put a target on his back. It didn't seem like he actually needed to do what he did. And so it feels like he's misreading these situations a little bit, but then I think about it and I say, okay, realistically, if you're Saree and Ozzy, you're down to final 10, you know that you're always going to be the biggest threats out there. Like no matter what, you know, people don't want to take you to the end. Who else can be even remotely close to your caliber? Well, Rick Devin's can be there. He can be at that level. And so part of me wonders, like, did they always want to keep Devin's in the game to ensure that they have a shield? Because when I was looking at it, it's like, I know Aubrey right now coming off of Edge of Extinction isn't at the same level she was coming off of Korong. But if you look at the four old school players, meaning pre-40 players that are still left in the game, Ozzy, Saree, Devin's, Ozzy and Saree, believe it or not, I got there eventually. Ozzy and Saree should be doing everything they can to make that the final four. Because if that's the final four, or if all four of those people are in the final five, that gives you a chance because you can make the argument to somebody else, hey, Devin's is a bigger threat. Aubrey's a bigger threat. Whereas if you're going with Jonathan, with Joe, who aren't catching any votes, despite the fact that they're the best challenge performers out there other than Ozzy, I mean, everybody's going to want to go to the end with them if they're still in the game late. And so that's where when it's between Stephanie and Devin's, did they ever feel like Stephanie was a threat to win and people would use her as a shield? Or was it, hey, good, Devin's just keeps putting that target on his back. That means they're not looking at us, but let's keep that target around as long as we possibly can.
That's a really good point. I mean, every step you get closer to tribal council, everyone's thinking, who do they want to sit next with? As soon as you get to the merge, in my case on season 49, I think Christina was already talking about who she wanted to sit next to at like day three out there. I was like, you're thinking way too far. We haven't even hit the merge yet, but I like that you're thinking that way. It's just funny sometimes how people will think ahead and there's a danger in thinking too far ahead. But I think in this case, Phil, I agree with what you're saying. I think, you know, you get to a point and being a big threat or having a big threat in front of you is a good thing. It's a good shield. But sometimes the smaller targets that people want to bring to the end become more of a liability because that's a seat that now they're taking mm-hmm. that you could be sitting in. So that's a valid point. I mean, I think it was just... I don't know. I could be completely wrong. Maybe they weren't planning to throw any votes on Devin's and he misread it, you know, kind of two tribals back, you know, consecutively. But I don't know. I just felt, I was like, he's saying a lot. But as you guys pointed out, he tends to do that. He's mm-hmm. he's an entertainer. He's, you know, I will say that whole sequence where he was just rattling off everyone's dirty laundry. I can, having sat at tribal council, I could feel the emotions that would have been coming up inside of me if someone was like popping off like that. And even, you know, I thought he did it really masterfully. I think it was great. And I can't really think of many live tribal councils where the conversations really seemed like they changed the outcome of the vote. Like they kind of a lot of times seem performative. It's like someone kind of doing their best. It's like a Hail Mary pass. They're going to everybody. People are telling them what they want to hear. And then they sit down. This live tribal council, though, at least from the edit, kind of came off like, yes, I think Stephanie was the big target at that point. But I was like, dang, this is the closest I've seen to a live tribal council where these conversations and these things that people are firing off seem like it could legitimately be swaying someone that's maybe on the fence in a way that, I mean, I can speak from our experience. Anytime something like that would have happened on 49, people were pretty locked in, you know, and a lot of it's very performative. It's like theater, and you have to be really careful because you want to say things that let the opponent, you know, that don't tip your opponents off to what you're about to do, but you don't want to be too leaning hard that way to make your allies who you're voting with now start to be like, oh my God, is Steven like going rogue? Like he's selling this too hard. And it's like a fine line. And that was just the chaos that like led up to the vote, and the chaos and the tribal council was amazing. I think this edit really captured what it feels like sometimes, like right before you go to tribal council. And I believe it when a lot of those players were saying this is one of the most chaotic ones, if not the most chaotic pre-tribal scramble that they've ever had. And yeah, it's crazy. The plans change all the time.
And like, and I think, you know, there's a common denominator here, and that is Rick Devens, because it was back in that Julia vote, back in Edge of Extinction, where it was the ultimate live tribal where it took up like 30 minutes of the episode. Rick Devens is there for that. And ultimately, I think, doesn't he play the idol for David, or David plays his idol or something, and Julia just goes home in a very basic 9-1 vote or something like that. But when Devens is there, he gets people thinking, he gets people scrambling. And I think that there's something about the bravado of him that's really working right now on this season, especially because everybody's got their thing, but nobody has the bravado that he has and the confidence he has. You know, he's excited. He's got the smile on his face. This was built for me, Jeff. I can't wait to go flip this coin. When, you know, you keep hearing Aubrey say, I'm a psycho, and then she goes and eats the grub or she does something else. Devens is also a psycho. Devens is just being a psycho with your vote out there. And, you know, it's always the unpredictable people are the people you don't want to deal with. And right now, Devens, he's unpredictable because you might be sitting there last night going, why is he blowing up like this? I thought we were good, dude. Like, why are you doing this? But that unpredictability just creates doubt, and that doubt creates entertaining TV. So thank you, Rick Devens, the alternate somehow for season 50.
Yeah. And you never know too. Like I would not be surprised if it comes out later, we find out that maybe others knew that he was about to do that. Like maybe he gave people a heads up. Hey, by the way, I'm going to do this. Like there were definitely times where we would, I'll never forget. There was a moment where Savannah and Christina in season 49, they like scripted out this entire argument and they delivered it so flawlessly that as they were saying it, I was like, wait, was this the thing that they scripted? I was like, this seems so genuine, and they nailed it. And Devens is exactly like that. And it's funny because I think back to season 49 and Rizzo really, I mean, he mentioned Devens several times and like a lot of Devens' influence, I think, comes through in some of Rizzo's gameplay with the theatrics at Tribal Council. And I've been thinking this has got to be surreal for him as he's sitting there and he's used to being the one like causing chaos, like standing up, dangling an idol, you know, being the center, the spotlight's on him. And now there are a bunch of main characters, legends that have played the game, and Devens, the best to ever do that. And so it's just so funny. I'm like, man, I wonder if Rizzo was like, dang, that's my thing now. Like, what are you doing? But I think it's going to work out well for Rizzo, though. You know, I think sometimes it's the tallest blade of grass that gets cut first. And, you know, I just wonder what's going through his head. I can't wait to catch up with him and see what he was thinking during that whole thing.
Yeah, because he seemed genuinely excited. And somebody who didn't, Blake, you mentioned you used to like Joe. Somebody said, we got to have the screenshot of everybody jumping up when the thing landed on heads and Joe just sitting there so mad. Like, we need that screenshot. What are we like, Blake? I'm looking at you with this because you were a Joe. You did believe Joe could win 48. Now we're sitting here and we're watching this season. It feels like everything Joe's doing is wrong. It's the complete opposite of what Rizzo and Devens are doing. And I think that's why it's making me think that way. Like, why is it that Joe, who everybody seems to like in real life, just nobody is taking him seriously at all with Survivor?
I think here we go. Here's what's actually going to happen here. The thought process of, if we find four people and get some honor and integrity, honor and integrity, honor and integrity, honor and integrity. You've heard it. You felt it. You know it. You're calling an alliance by it. Oh my gosh. Coach and Chrissy went, honor and integrity takes a huge hit. Now Stephanie's gone. Honor and integrity. It's something where if I say it enough, I didn't vote for Coach. I didn't want to vote for Coach. I didn't write Coach's name down. They forced me to write Coach's name down. And now we have the story of Stephanie saying, like, I saw this in my going through my Twitter earlier, where it was like, oh, Joe told me at the last second I'm going home. And she's like, thanks a lot for nothing, Joe. Like, what the hell is that? And it's something I saw some of this online, and I kind of agree with it, of the thought process of, some people are really good at playing Survivor from the bottom. Some people are really good at playing Survivor from the top. Some people can masterfully balance alliances. Some people can only probably get further if they work together with like-minded individuals that have values. And it is something where it's like, Joe, what are you going to do at Final Tribal? Like, did you learn anything from your first season? Because if you make it to the end with two other people, and you've been the person who's been sour on every single strategic decision and every single, like, how come you didn't tell me you had an idol? I wasn't on your original tribe. I wasn't in your original alliance. I wasn't in your second tribe. I wasn't in your second alliance. Why did you keep that from me? And it's like, are you insane? Like, and it's something where it's like, do you just not understand how the game works? And there's no way that he doesn't understand how the game works, because he's made it to final nine, two seasons in a row. This is an all-star season. Like, if he was off the handle, or if he was not able to hang, he'd be out by now. And I get there is the layer of, let's drag him to the end. Are they doing it in that from final 22? Because that's like the first issue they had with Joe, of like, we can't really work with this guy. And that was, I think, episode two. And I think he's playing well enough to be at a final nine, but it's something where, Joe, how do you not understand? Like, at least Jonathan has a game plan, has something. Somebody was like, he learned from Boston Rob, but he has none of the pizzazz and none of the charisma to kind of rough around the edges. Whenever Boston Rob backstabs you, you're kind of like, oh, you scoundrel. Whenever Joe does it, you're like, drag his ass through the mud tomorrow. And like, I think both of these men are cruising to, they're not going to go home at nine. They're not going to go home at eight. And then they're going to win three immunities each between now and the finals or whatever. And you're like, who's going to be at the end? But like, I'm literally confused of what is Joe going to say besides, I'm a really good guy. I'm a really good person. And in my mind, that means good Survivor player. And everyone's going to go, and I think it could be as bad. If Joe's in the final three for this crew, how this jury's going, Coach may say hi to him. Chrissy may go, but I think everybody else is going to go, hey, final two, I'm not even going to mention Joe. And it's going to be disaster. And it's going to be really sad. And there's going to be some like, guys, make sure you ask Joe a question. I don't know. I don't know why I'm going this way with it, but it just feels like, how does Joe win a season of Survivor? And I did kind of believe it, and maybe it was kind of like, not anti Kyle, but Kyle was so good that I wanted to at least have a shot at somebody else beating him. But like, Kyle should have won unanimously, now that I think about it. And you're like, how is Joe ever going to win Survivor? And he has to lead, like, just like Rizzo said, Stephanie, are you going to lead a vote? And if Rizzo watches Joe lead a vote against Devens, is it going to be like, great job, Joe? Or is it going to be like, thanks, Joe, we'll take it from here? And then he gets nothing. Like, I don't even see how Joe could get any credit from now on. Like, I think he's drawing dead at final nine, and it's disaster.
I couldn't agree more. I was just going to say, I think the thing that's been made, that's been making season 50 so memorable and exciting, is all these players are playing to win. Like, they're coming in, they're taking big swings, they're taking risks. They, you know, Christian's going on a journey to, you know, maybe lose the game. Let's not get into that. But like, you know, people are coming out swinging, and I don't, there, it makes it very glaring for the players that aren't swinging. And like, there is a strategy to laying low to a certain point. So I think we still have yet to see a lot of the swings that people are taking, but I couldn't agree more. I think Joe needs to come out and show that he's changed from his first game. I think that's one of the things the jury are probably thinking, is like, okay, did you learn from your first time playing? Are you playing differently? Are you a dynamic player? And two, are you like, are you taking risks? Are you getting out there?
Sorry to interrupt your thought. I finally got it to work.
Dude, no, this is a great interruption. I love this. I did not clock this as I was watching. I was at a watch party last night in Denver.
Like, that's insane. Like, you're just not even participating in the world around you at that point.
Oh, no, he is, but he's just like the you know, they're the...
Somebody just split. Won $1 million, Joe. Like, that, he knows that's what that him. Moment was.
Well, and here's the thing, like, I agree with everything here, and Steven, I agree with what you're saying. He kind of reminds me of Ty. And what I mean by this is, Ty was well-liked enough that people were willing to keep him around. Like, he wasn't annoying. He wasn't somebody that you were like, I can't be around this guy. Like, I just can't stand him. Everybody likes Ty as a person. Ty got 0 votes at Final Tribal Council. Right. And he comes back and he plays the second time and he makes it to Final Four. And really, the reason Brad loses that season, or one of the main reasons he loses that season, is because of how horrible he is to Ty at the end of the game. And people are like, dude, be nice to Ty. We like Ty. Also, we never would have voted for Ty again. And I feel like that's where Joe's at. Like, Joe is a guy that you want, that you're okay being around, but Survivor is just not the thing. And when you're watching Devins go up and flip a coin, when you're watching Rizzo get on Stephanie, when you're watching Jonathan even try to learn from Boston Rob, like Blake said, Joe's just sitting there in the middle, just like, just to remind everybody, like, he's just that. Oh God. It's like, come on, man. It's all going to be okay.
Like how that happens in real life is, I went to the Dodgers game, but I was a Cincinnati Reds fan, and somebody hit a homer, and I'm so who are you rooting against? Are you, you're rooting for Mr. Beast's pocketbook to not give another $1 million. And like, you just got grand slammed on, dude. Like, I don't know. And it's something where I was such a Joe fan, where you're like, a year later, who am I anymore? Like, do I even like mac and cheese anymore? Does it smell like home to me? Like, I don't know. I said his name too, so let me do my Mr. Beast thought. Beware advantage. Okay. It kind of feels more like the ultimate shot in the dark, and I feel like that's maybe been talked a lot over the last, like, he literally says the math out loud. It's like a 1 in 6 chance. How about 50-50? So a coin flip for your life is actually, it's better than what Genevieve did, and it's better than what Savannah did of Shot in the Dark or whatever. I think Savannah did Shot in the Dark. I think.
No, she forgot.
Yeah.
Let's pretend. Let's live in the world where she just messed up. So I think Mr. Beast, it's very interesting to me. This show has been on for 25 years, the show being Survivor, and us going like, Mr. Beast is an absolute legend. He is the coolest thing in the world. Thanks for coming to our small little show. That's the only thing that is glaring to me of like, Joe, or not Joe, his name is Jeff. Jeff, do you not believe in Survivor? Like, are we using celebrities to try to get back? Like, people will never watch, like, 40 million people, 50 million people watched a broadcast of yours. You are etched into that, it'll never be beat by anything. And YouTube algorithms and YouTube video counts, sure, some of those videos have been watched more than 40 million times, but the cultural capital of Survivor versus Mr. Beast's YouTube channel from the last 5 years is like David and Goliath or whatever you want to do. It's like the Yankees and like, oh, whoever won a bunch of World Series recently, not the Dodgers, but somebody else.
You should probably go with like a Triple A team. I think that's the comment you're trying to make here. Go with like
yeah, the, but I don't. I would feel like people would be like, he's better than a Triple A team, and then I'd lose immediately. So it is something where you're like, Jeff, why are we not kowtowing, but we're like, thank God we have Mr. Beast to bump up this prize money. And it's like, what are we doing? Mr. Beast is so influential to Rizzo's brother. Mr. Beast is so influential to Rick Devin's kids. But like our audience, it is something when they're like, this is one of the most, I think he said, one of the most famous humans alive. I was like, Jeff, are you even, who is writing this script for you? This is an insane script.
He is.
Humans?
Though.
Human, like you can't just say dudes. Like
I was gonna say, like I think you kind of said what I was thinking indirectly. Like, right, like us three, we are not the demographic, we are not the target audience. I think a lot of the people probably listening to this show right now are not the target demographic, but they are trying to bridge the gap to the next generation, getting new viewers engaged. You know, the Rizzo little brothers that maybe really love Mr. Beast, love or hate him. He's in the algorithm in a way that Survivor just isn't for some people. Like the reach that people know Mr. Beast and the craziest thing, the most disappointing thing, I told all my friends and like everyone, I was like, I'm going to be on Survivor, you know? And they were like, that show's still on. And I was like, yeah, I just got back doing it. What did you think? I lost 21 pounds in rehab. Like what? And like, but if I was to bring up Mr. Beast, they would roll their eyes. They'd be like, oh yeah, that guy. But like, he's out there. And so I don't know. I do think a little bit of some of these cameos, as cringy as they do feel. But I think it's kind of like a, you know, you're just trying to get the next gen engaged.
How did you feel?
Carter is great.
Everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question, what's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge. They also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging. Shipped nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store. They can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water. A massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal's service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. More than 6 million people have used BetterHelp globally, and the reviews speak for themselves. You can head over to BetterHelp.com/reviews to explore real customer feedback and see why BetterHelp has an average live therapy session rating of 4.9 out of 5. All BetterHelp therapists have at least 3 years and 1,000 hours of hands-on experience with required education, training, and certifications across a range of mental health specialties. Getting started at BetterHelp is simple. Just answer a few questions and you'll be matched with a therapist based on your needs. Your first therapist isn't the right fit? BetterHelp allows you to switch therapists at any time. See the reviews, see what stands out, and see if BetterHelp is right for you. Visit BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Hey, Steven, how did you feel, though, about what Blake's first point there? How did you feel about the fact that Jeff was like, oh, to come on our little show like Survivor?
I didn't like that. I did think they... It was a little bit too much. I think he glazed him a little too hard. Mm-hmm. I was like, what? Yeah, that comment was pretty rough. And, but I will say, just like overall, I don't know if Mr. Beast, I just, the way that he just kind of hung back, he was really short, sweet to the point, didn't try to steal the spotlight, but it felt like Survivor was really trying to put the spotlight on him. And I'm putting myself in the shoes of someone working at CBS. I'm like, the reason they're probably doing that is because they know maybe just the fact that he's on the show is going to draw new viewers that maybe haven't watched it. And so like the more they drop his name, it makes it for a weird viewing experience for us though. I feel old, you know,
I almost wonder. Yeah. Well, and exactly. And Blake said right there with you, I'm 34. So like, it's definitely weird on our end. I just wanted to mention that I was the youngest one on the podcast. It's the only reason I said that. I got the most gray in my beard though. But anyway, but I do feel like it's almost like Mr. Beast didn't actually give Jeff what he wanted. It's almost like Jeff wanted Mr. Beast to be a bigger part of this. And Mr. Beast sat back and said, no, I didn't want to overshadow. And I know, Blake, obviously you're not a big Mr. Beast guy. You can't even let me say that sentence without shaking your head. But let me finish this thought. The thing is with Mr. Beast here, I think because he has hosted other games and because he has his channel, I think Mr. Beast knows what the audience of Places want. And I think he knows the audience of Survivor doesn't actually want 40 minutes of Mr. Beast. And I think he was able to say, this is about the players. I've enjoyed this game. I appreciate this. I've taken a lot of inspiration from this. I'm proud to be a part of this, but I'm not going to be over the top. He barely talked. He kept doing like the hand prayers and all this different stuff. And I was like, I feel like Jeff really badly wanted him to take over a moment, to say more stuff. Even with the coin flip, he made that more about Rick Devins than he did about Mr. Beast. And I feel like that was good. But then I also feel like that's where they're definitely, I feel like CBS wanted more from Mr. Beast in this moment. And I think I like this episode more because we didn't get more Mr. Beast, but I do think that it went kind of against what Jeff and everybody was hoping for.
Yep. Totally agree. I think that the episode would have been one. So here's another thing to keep in mind too. There was so much that happened in this episode. Maybe there was more content of Mr. Beast, but the tribal council itself, all the chaos leading up to it, it was so dynamic. There was so much good footage of gameplay that they needed to put in this window. And it was a 2-hour episode, which is longer than usual. So they already extended it. I do wonder if maybe there was a little bit more, but I really doubt it. I agree with you, Phil. I think he has a good read on like what people are looking for. I think he knew. I loved when he was like, no, dude, Survivor's not a small show. Like this is, you know, and a lot of people, I think, don't realize it, that like Survivor is still like the number one reality TV show in terms of viewership in the world. It's just like, it's much more of a staple than people give it credit for sometimes, because it's been on for so long. And I couldn't agree more. I think he did a really good job not overshadowing the players. He understood, I'm just here to give you guys $1 million, introduce maybe a little bit of chaos and fun, but I'm not making this about me. I'm not going to go have a fishing montage and sing you guys a song. I am going. Yeah. Right. I'm like, yeah, I'm a fan of the show, but you guys do your thing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, people, I mean, there's people all over the place. This isn't just like one or two people in our comments. There's people all over the place being like, this is one of the most entertaining episodes in Survivor history. And it had the drama of a coin flip. And I know the coin flip, we'll get into the coin flip and what happens if that thing lands the other way, because this is potentially the worst twist of all time. But, you know, we're watching this, and this was an entertaining episode. There was good gameplay. It just felt like Jeff was giving a lot of credit where it didn't need to be due. And Will brought that up on the recap last night. He was like, you know, the players are only playing because of Mr. Beast. That's the way Jeff made it seem. It's like, no, the players are going to play no matter what, especially when you have this caliber of player. But, you know, compared to what Zach Brown did, I mean, Zach Brown was on 25 minutes of the episode. Mr. Beast was 5 minutes, if that. He went and sat on the chair, and he literally just sat in the chair. I was like, oh my God, like what is going on here? I want to make a joke right now, but I'm not doing it. But he's just sitting in the chair watching the entire tribal council play. I didn't say anything.
Yeah, anyway. No, he just, I loved it. I thought it was just really well done. Maybe there were some scenes where he did say more, and they just were like, we have too much really good gameplay. We have to trim it down. But I don't know if that's the case. It was just really funny. Everyone leading up to this episode with the Mr. Beast teaser throughout the entire season, which episodes is it going to be? When's Mr. Beast coming in? Oh my gosh. Zach Brown took up 25 minutes. The Jimmy Kimmel thing was I hate that. I hated that twist I don't want to get into it, but you know, and so you're like, and it's all
watch
building up
them,
to
go for it. Let's get into it. I mean, I where I want to go with it is the celebrity thing is over.
You got
now.
Steven angry now, and you're not even letting him say it. Yeah,
no,
he's about
no
to
well,
throw
let's
his
do it of like the four celebrity things are done. There's not gonna be a fifth, sixth, or seventh celebrity. Did you like them? Did you think they were worth it for the landmark season? Do you want to see them 51 and onwards? How do you feel about the celebrity stuff now that it's over?
Yeah, Mike Bloom put out a thing today and said, rank the four. And I think all three of us should go around and we should rank them. I think we should. Like, what's your personal? And go ahead, Steven. You go first.
Well, can we recap? What were the four again? Because it was
Billie Eilish's Boomerang Idols.
Yeah. Remember last night she said, hey, I'm a big Survivor fan. Also, go watch my movie. Like, oh, sick tie-in. That was fun.
Zach Brown does a thingy.
Yep.
Jimmy Fallon ruins Christian's life. And then... And then
Mr. Beast. So the four of them. Mr. Beast. So, Steven, you go first.
Okay. So I honestly do think the Mr. Beast one is at the top, if I'm going to be honest. I didn't like the Billie Eilish Boomerang Idol because it's like, look at Genevieve. She found two and she had to give them away. And if she was able to keep either of those two idols, she'd still be in the game. And I think as someone that searched unsuccessfully every single night, nobody on my cast knew at the time, but I would use my hearing aids as an excuse to wake up early as the sun was cresting. People would still be sleeping. If you wake up and someone's not at camp, you're like, what is going on? And I would say, oh, I was just going to get my hearing aids. But I was always, Savannah caught me a few times. She was a freaking, man. She just like always slept with one eye open, and she always slept in the hammock, and I always had to walk by her. Oh gosh. I hated that. And she caught me a few times looking, and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, yeah, I'm looking for an idol. You want to help out, or what's the thing? And I guess where I'm going with this is I searched so hard, high and low, and they are not as easy to find as you might think. And I would have been so frustrated if I had to just send it to someone else. And so I didn't like that challenge, or I didn't like that, but it wasn't as bad as the Zach Brown one. It just took up too much airtime. What was even, I mean, they got to eat some fish, right? That was the only thing.
It was a reward.
I mean, it didn't change the game.
Yeah.
And then, remind me the fourth.
Jimmy Fallon, your favorite one.
That was by far my least favorite. And let me explain why. Let's get into it. Blake, you got me fired up, dude. I'm ready to go off on this one. I hated it for so many reasons. It's one thing to lose your vote on a journey. People kind of expect that if you come back from a journey, you get a chance at least to spin the story. So whether you won or lost, you have the freedom and the agency as a player to admit to it, or say, no, I lost my vote, which I don't know why you would do, but you know, you at least have some freedom. I feel like it took away Christian's maneuverability. He not only didn't know what was in the letter, but he had to read it in front of everybody. He had to tell everybody, I lost my vote. Like he can't even pretend that maybe I have my vote and then go tell your allies, look, I lost my vote, but I think we can get through it. It did seem from the edit that if people did, and not only that, but he had to put a vote on himself. So I'm getting ahead of myself, but the fact that all of those, that just seemed like the letter might as well have read, hey guys, I'm going home because I lost this. I didn't finish this puzzle in time. I took a risk in season 50 where you should be swinging hard. It's season 50, dude. Like you leave it all out on the court. I think it takes a lot of balls to go out and go on a journey to do these amazing things. And yes, if you don't succeed, lose your vote. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to announce it to everybody in this very public way. And I was thinking through like what players maybe could have been put in that same exact situation and gotten away with it, like maneuvered through it. Someone with an idol. I think Suri was in a really good spot. Aside from that, I think that, you know, you get to a point at the merge and sometimes a lot of people, especially people who have a target that they think is on their back, will just be like the Sandra thing, like anyone but me. And like, mm-hmm. sometimes the easiest vote just gains momentum. And that's why I felt that Devin's maybe felt like the easiest vote. And when chaos is introduced, you have this Mr. B super advantage that's coming in. Yes, people are making plans. They're not really factoring that in because how could you? You don't know what it is. But you get to tribal and you find out what that is. And like, it kind of shakes things up. And I was like, okay, it's probably going to default if Devin's flips it to the next easiest thing, because you don't have a lot of time to think through things. You don't have a lot of time to talk with your allies and connect. So you default to like the anyone but me mentality sometimes. And I'm speaking very universally. Every player's different. I get that. But I just think psychologically, like, being in tribal council, if that happened to me, I think it'd be pretty. Anyway, I'm kind of going on a tangent. So let me ring it back.
You're doing great.
That vote, that advantage or disadvantage for Christian just seemed like a death sentence. And I think if it was just like you lose your vote, like a normal journey, I would have not felt as strongly against it. But I don't know. I just don't know how you dig yourself out of that.
To Blake's question then, because, you know, Blake did ask one in there that I overshadowed, but his question was net positive or no? The celebrity stuff, all four of them together, is it a net positive? Is it a net negative? Do you want to see him again?
I mean, personally, I'm talking me. I don't care about those things, but I also understand that Survivor and CBS, it's a business, right? And so they need to get new viewers. They need to engage more people. So I'm okay with it. If I was out there on the island and I got a chance to see some of these celebrities, I'd be like, this is crazy, cool, whatever. Like, it's not going to really change my thoughts on things. So I think it was probably a net positive in a way that we as viewers don't think of, but I have to keep reminding myself, I am not the intended audience for some of these. This mm-hmm. is this is a milestone season. And I think it is a chance to engage people that maybe forgot Survivor was still on, or just watched and then kind of lost track. And if it's Mr. Beast or if it's Jimmy Fallon or Billie Eilish, whoever it is, as long as it keeps my favorite show running longer, I will put up with a little bit of a cameo here and there, mm-hmm. as painful as it can be. I'm so curious to hear what some of the players really think. What they publicly say is one thing. You're not going to bite the hand that feeds, but also like, if I was out there and all these, I'd be like, what is going on? Like, you know, like this is supposed to be about the players. So I get it. I get it. So I don't know. Like, Blake, what do you think about that? You know, net positive or net negative? I feel like I know the answer.
But, so for me, I think what I want Survivor production to realize about this is that the Mr. Beast part is number one, not because it was unfailable or whatever that word is. I think I'm pronouncing it wrong, maybe. But Rick Devens made that twist really good. We are paying attention to our all-star world-level class contestants. We'll make stuff good. I don't like that we can't use our idols from Rizzo and Ozzy on other people. That's restrictive. That's stifling. The more information I have, the less interesting stuff gets. Oh, the idol can't be played for anyone else. I only have to worry about two idols for the rest of this whole last five episodes of a 17-person merge. Oh, it's only these three people that have idols. Cool. That sucks. So I do think the Billie Eilish boomerang is probably the worst possible thing that happened. Nothing happened. Even at final nine, none of those idols have been played. None of those have boomeranged back. It's an absolute disaster on that front. I don't think it should mince words on that. That is bad. That every other idol thing of it's like a goat on AstroTurf or that birdcage idol, all of those are better than the Billy Rank boomerang, Billy Eilish boomerang idol. We were talking about how cool this was, and we do talk weekly, talk daily about this, and we had some fun moments. But what was actually on the program is not something that made this stuff pay off well. All it did was doom one of our favorite players in Genevieve. And all it did was Aubrey couldn't get out of it and was like, I'm just going to burn it. And that is the least interesting way on both of those levels. The Jimmy Fallon thing, I think one thing I want them to take away from that is if there's a very powerful thing, let the very powerful thing be true, but then let's not do a random way to get to, like, almost have it be a reward challenge. Of like, hey guys, this journey is going to be a game-breaking power. Who wants in? You may have to lie about it, and it could. It's such a game-breaking power. It's hot potato. It could burn your hands. If you're someone like Joe, you're not going to be able to handle it. But if you're someone like Devens, this is what you're waiting for. Mm-hmm. Who wants it? Who doesn't want it? And maybe offer them hamburgers, and then I'll give up my hamburgers. I'll go play for this. And then it's not a 10-minute puzzle thing and you lose. Like, it's so much cooler if the Jimmy Fallon stuff is a win that time. If you go look at this, there's a lot of cool stuff that's just lost to the ocean forever. And I know you can't plan around that as production, but maybe you can. Maybe you don't give – there's an ability to lose if you're very forthcoming and tell your – 12 people on the island at that point, you're going to want to want this one unless you're a little afraid of advantages. I'll tell you that much. Who's in? Now we don't have to announce in an envelope, I'm going home. I think there's some intention from the production in these idols. Because once again, I think one thing I kind of complained about before we started 50 was, oh, the auction's broken or idols are broken. Just think about it a little harder, production. Come up with some fail safes where the idols will get played. It's final nine. There still hasn't been an idol. Aubrey's idol was
Aubrey's
burned.
Was thrown. Yeah.
Aubrey's was burned. There's no idol play. What's your favorite idol play in Survivor 50? There's not one. If you had told me that, are you hyped for season 50? I am. It's a cool cast. I like some of my favorite people are coming back. If you had told me, by the way, at final eight, final seven, there's still not an idol played. I'd be like,
yeah.
Maybe I should go work out every Wednesday and then I can like have 3 months of working out instead of 3 months of paying attention to no idols. That's a tangent. But like, I think Billie Eilish Boomerangs is a solid 4 for me. I think the cleverness of the Jimmy Fallon could have been cool. I think the Zac Brown is default 2 for me because it's not a negative. And then I don't think it's, yes, we bumped up the money. I like the 2 million. It could have been anybody's name, but the fact that it's freaking, God dang it, Mr. Beast is kind of like, ugh. But okay, we bumped up the money, which we should have done already. And it's, I think what's funny to me, it's an iconic thing from a show that came out a year and a half ago. And it's an iconic thing from Mr. Beast. You've never seen this before, except on Mr. Beast. It's flipping a coin. People have flipped coins since Mesopotamia, brother. Like,
wait.
And you're just like, brother, so, that's not an iconic Mr. Beast thing. That's just living life, dude. Like,
not what are ancient doing? History drop, dude. That was
ancient, when they're flipping rocks. Like, so here's the thing, Blake. So what are you saying was the number one celebrity cameo slash?
I like with Mr. Beast. Beware advantage Supercoin more than any other celebrity thing.
All right, how to make Blake full screen for that, because he was so down on the Mr. Beast thing. If you go back and listen to our Digging Deeper from the finale of 49, he was so down on Mr. Beast. But here's what I actually think. I think both of you kind of, as I was listening to both of you talk, I think I figured out really what's been proven by season 50. If it works, it's actually probably pretty good. If it doesn't work, though, it's terrible. And I think that was the biggest problem with all four of these twists. The Zac Brown thing is a non-factor. I know people didn't like how much screen time it took up. It didn't break the game. It didn't really do anything. It took away confessionals from Tiffany and Chrissy. And I'm going to be honest with everybody, I don't care. Like, I know that bothered a lot of people. I really don't care. It took away from Devin's. It took away from Jonathan. It took away from Tiffany. It took away from Ceree. Like, that's the episode that all of them didn't have anything. At the end of the day, it was a reward. It was a bigger reward than anything else. Somehow it's considered a worse reward than Applebee's. Don't tell Zac Brown that. But it's a reward. I don't really care that much. It was just annoying that it took up so much time. The Mr. Beast thing is getting great reviews because the coin landed the way it needed to. If it didn't, this twist is getting shit on. The Christian thing, if Christian ends up finishing the puzzle and getting the reward, then this ends up working. It's a pretty cool twist. Maybe we see something different. One in the urn. And he has a vote that he can bank until final 7 if he doesn't vote at that next tribal. That's pretty cool. And the but the other one, the Billie Eilish Boomerang Idol, because of the way it was designed, everybody was going to know who had idols. So then it was about getting it to Boomerang back, because the secret was who had the boomerang. But now that the boomerang part didn't work, now we just know that Ozzy and Rizzo have idols. Everybody knows they have them and they can't use them for anybody else. So I think that's what the biggest problem was, is this season proved with the advantages, the risk reward version of the advantages, the risk part always sucks and actually makes it so much worse. It makes the show a lot worse. Just put the advantages in. And like Blake said, maybe have them compete in a reward to get the advantage. And that's what rewards now become, rather than, oh, you're going to risk this. Because if that coin landed on tails last night and Rick Devins goes home because he flipped the coin, and yes, he wanted to do it and all that, we don't get a vote out last night, and instead somebody goes home because they flipped a Mr. Beast coin. The internet is not as happy as they were coming out of that episode. That's just a fact. So that's where I go with it. And I think that there's a lot of advantages that can work. They just need to find a way to ensure that, like, the positive portion is happening, because this season, the negative portion, I mean, was not good. I think, Steven, like you're saying, like Christian having to vote for himself, having to tell everybody, that's a disaster. And I do think, like, between that and Blood Moon and all of this, you're losing Colby, you're losing Genevieve, you're losing Christian with the double boot they did, you lose Coach. They lost the players they didn't want to lose at these type of twists. And that does have me thinking that maybe we'll see a little bit different there moving forward. But I agree. I'd probably put Jimmy Fallon thing at the bottom. I think that's the worst.
And one layer real quick, I'm going to jump in. The thought process. Well, you can't do that. I'm doing my Jeff impersonation. You have to have risk. And it's like, the risk can be the hamburger or whatever. Like, I don't get why it's like, they can't have rice to start 26 days. And it's like, I get you want the game to be hard, but it's like, why are we making some people miserable? Like, why do we have disaster tribes? Still, disaster tribes are happening because, oh, you didn't get your flint, or there was that rewatching Second Chances. Oh, we made up a third tribe and you're going to have to start over and make a new thing on a beach out of nowhere. I'd be like, why is this shit so hard? We're going to lose the next two. You guys don't have to make shelters and we do. And then we go play Foursquare after it. Like, I'm going to be tired. Like, my arms are fucked. Like, I could be the best Foursquare player in the world and still lose. And it's like the risk reward is a buff you're drawing or some paint you got out of an urn. And it's like, that's not as cool as, all right, it's time for a game breaking power, but it's, we're not going to know which three of you have it. And if you're coming back and say you don't have it, that could be something that maybe you could never, you can't get that stank off your body of like, there's a chance Blake has a super idol because he went there with Rizzo and Sari. You like that self-insert?
Always. Always. Yeah. Steven, oh, no, I hope people are watching the podcast and not just listening, because you are doing Mr. Beast level pantomiming as this is going on, just so you know.
You know what? I'm trying to call this my third life crisis.
Mr. Ram? There's a new Mr. YouTube Ram? Channel.
Mr. Rom, but no, no, you guys are spot on. I'm loving the takes. You guys have actually brought up points I hadn't considered, and like that's why I love tuning into your show in general. But like, this has just been a fun conversation. So I'm not trying to go Jeff Probst levels of glazing you the way Mr. Beast, Phil Blake. But
I'll take I need it.
For sure, dude. Yeah. We all need it sometimes, you know? It never hurts to hear. But you know, credit where credit's due, you brought up some really good points that if those advantages went the other way, we would be feeling very differently about them. And it's kind of interesting. Like, I will just give you guys a perspective of how I felt when I learned I was on the Yellow Tribe. Statistically, the Yellow Tribe is the disaster tribe. I was like, I told my girlfriend, I was like, if anything, one, because I'm vain, I'm like, dude, I'm so pale. Yellow is my least, it just looks awful on me. And I was like, anything but yellow. And she's like, really? And I was like, well, the real reason is this, but like the jokey reason is this. I got yellow and I was like, ugh. And I'm genuinely, if those two folks did not get yanked in pregame for pregame.
Tell us everything. Tell us everything now.
Well, dude, if those two people did not get pulled and MC and Jason didn't come in, I am fairly confident that we would have been the disaster tribe. I just think that MC and Jason brought this like X factor that almost made it seem like unfair. It was like, we were this like fantasy football team. We got to draft first, but then also got to like draft second and third. It was just crazy. Like, and so what I'm getting at is it changes the, and like journeys too.
Have you had a guy with dreads on your team?
Dude, I love Matt. Matt's my boy. I was so gutted to see him and Jason get popped. It made sense. I was like, and that's what was so funny about the merge is Uli was like, no, we're open to working with everyone. I'm like, bro, you just voted out two people.
The coolest dread guy ever, bro.
And you guys didn't even get a chance to see how cool Matt really is. He hid some things about his personal life. I don't want to air it out here because it's not my place to say it, but like, he is the most interesting man in the world. This guy has just lived a million lives. And like, I wish that we got a chance to learn more about him. But with all that aside, where I'm going with this is the amount of fear that is kind of instilled with you when you're going on a journey. A lot, I think it makes people that maybe wouldn't play scared play more scared, because you're like, damn, like normally I'd want to put my hat in the ring and go. I'm thinking about the journey I went on. They emphasized that it was a strenuous journey. That was like in the writing on the parchment, strenuous. And so a lot of people that maybe I think would have gone on it were like, and like knowing that you could lose your vote. But if that wasn't an obvious risk, you might get a more entertaining outcome. Like more people might be into it. And like, I'm glad that they weren't for me. It didn't work out in the long run.
Three of you guys do it and whoever finishes first. Right? And it's kind of like, I could mess up the code, or I'm just faster, or I am slower than Steve. I gotta hope he messes up. I'm gonna shout numbers behind him the whole time. I'm Rizzo. Like
that actually would have messed me up for sure. But like, I think what I'm getting at is like, you kind of brought up a really good point, Phil. You're like the players that are bold, they're coming out swinging, that are entertaining. That's what production wants, and that's what the viewers want. They want people that are playing hard. Those people that play hard, though, I mean, I guess it wouldn't be as exciting if there wasn't some penalty that went along mm-hmm. with it. But occasionally you get a penalty that's so bad that it penalizes players for doing what you should be doing on Survivor, which is playing as hard as you can. And yeah. I think there's probably a strategy element to playing hard, knowing when to play hard, and like knowing when to lay back. There's an art to that. But at the same time, yeah, Blake, what if I was running against two other people out there, that actually would have been pretty fun. Like,
yeah. And that's more visually entertaining. Like, honestly, like think about like, what do people watch at the Olympics? They watch sprints. They don't watch the marathon. Like the marathon has commercials throughout it, right? Because people are running by themselves for miles, like a lot of the time. And that comes from a distance runner. So whatever. I feel like you're
getting yourself here, brother.
That's fine. I can't do it anymore. So, but that's my thing, is like, it's more entertaining to watch people go head to head than to watch Stephanie just stand there with her arm above her head. And I think the other problem, and I had mentioned this on the Patreon today, if what happens here is you get Rick Devens. And again, I'm going to keep harping on this because I just feel like I need to, and nobody else has to chime in, but Rick Devens was the alternate for this season. I am sorry, but Rick Devens is not 24 out of 24 here, and he's not 12 out of 12 on the men's side. Like, Rick Devens should have been locked in as the second or third person. Casting team got to get it together on that one, because Rick Devens is delivering in the way you want, and Rick Devens saves this. But the problem is, in a future season, you're not going to have a Rick Devens. And the other thing I was thinking is, what happens if you get a person who's like, it might be me, it might not be me, I'm not really sure. A lot of times people are trying to pull blindside, so they don't play the shot in the dark. They don't know what's going on. Stephanie very well could have been the person going home here. I don't think she gets up to do this coin flip. I don't think she would have wanted to. So if you don't have a bold, out of control maniac like Rick Devens, now you're drawing rocks to flip a coin for somebody to potentially go home. That's crazy. And I think that, thankfully, we didn't go down that path. Thankfully, this worked out. But that's the nightmare scenario that nobody's talking about, because Rick Devens ensured that we did not get the nightmare scenario. So Rick Devens better be getting that invite. They made him an alternate for this season. Rick Devens better be number one pick for whatever the next returning player season is. And if he wants to come out, he better be the first person they put on that damn plane, because he's earned that legend status beyond anything else based on what he just did last night.
Yeah, I sat next to him at a watch party a few weeks ago, and I messaged him right after the episode aired. And I was like, I don't know how that seat didn't break under the immense weight of your massive balls, because that was a freaking sick move, dude. Like genuinely, having sat in tribal council, knowing that your game's on the line, and he's so articulate, and like the way he framed it, and you're totally right, Phil, like anyone else that gets up and does it, it wouldn't have landed as well. And that's what makes these returning seasons so great, is because you get the best of the best storytellers, the best game players, and you have a mix. And I think not everyone can be a Rick Devens, because if you get a whole season of Rick Devens, then you just get a bunch of people that are, you know, firing off. That's why sometimes Joe is a good foil, as frustrating as it can be to watch sometimes. But at the same time, yeah, man, that was so exciting. But if it had gone the other direction, if that coin landed the other way, I was watching that. I was like, they're going to cut to commercial. And they didn't. That's awesome. I was like, oh, and they let us see it. And that was cool. But you're right. It could go either way. And it's gotta be tough coming up with the challenges. You like, you want to do something cool and epic for 50, but sometimes they don't always land. And you know, it's just, yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of luck. There's a lot of luck involved in winning Survivor. Sorry, Blake. There's a lot of luck in winning Survivor. There's also a lot of luck in making a good season of Survivor. And right now, I think 50 is a good season. I think it's been lucky of production that things have actually broken their way more often than they've broken against them, because it could have been a disaster.
It could have been. I think with a newbie cast, I think all of these twists would have been would have landed flat because I think the benefit is like you have a lot of players that have played before. They kind of know how it works. They're coming in. They have a chip on their shoulder. They're looking to rewrite their legacy or prove people wrong, do things differently. So they're willing to step up and take the risks that I think some people might come into a new season and not want to risk it for the biscuit as much. They're like, I'm in a good spot. Why would I jeopardize that? Mm-hmm. And then you guys bring up a good point. I'm like, I've been rethinking ever since you mentioned, like, maybe the vote wasn't going on Devin's right away. You know, maybe he was actually safe and he just was coming out and being Devin's, which is very, very likely. And that kind of just brings up the really good point that, oh my gosh, where was I going with this? Have you guys ever had one of those thoughts that just like drift away as you're monologuing?
Never. No, we are always so on it. We've never had that happen ever.
You
never.
Seem no. on it. I knew it.
At least you're sitting here with two other people. So we can have this talk while you're trying to think of it. Like imagine doing this on a Patreon podcast alone. And you're like, well, shit, like I'm going to pause the episode and then I'm just going to start that thought over.
Where I was going with it, I think. Was basically you get folks that are in a good spot that are, they're playing the first time. They're trying to write their legacy for the first time. You get a cast of all stars. They're all really entertaining in their own way.
Whoa. That's Rick Devins and me. That's when you. I was skinny.
when was that taken? How long ago was that?
Literally his finale party. But
yeah.
Nice, man. Dude. Yeah, I got the privilege to sit next to Devin. Sorry, I don't mean to glaze him that hard. The privilege. I got to sit next to Devin. He was fucking cool. Like we just like hit it off. And yeah, like it's interesting, like having gone out there and played and you sit next to players that are actively in the game as the episode's airing and you're kind of like, you know, you're reading into body language. Like, is this a good episode for you or bad? And I will say this, like you get season 50 type of legends. All of them are iconic in their own way. All of them, Devin's, I did not realize he was an alternate until you guys said that. I wasn't up to date on the lore, but that's criminal to me because he is like bringing the energy on this season in a way that I don't think a lot of players are. But you get a lot of really good players that can articulate the stakes that are at play and they're willing to take those swings for the most part. And that sometimes doesn't always land, I think, maybe in a newbie season where you get maybe one Devins in a batch of 18 or two, but in a returning season, you get a lot of big, that's why it's been so fun is not only do they have drama, some of them have played together or they just out of the game have drama. Like that's so fun to watch play into it. And like Survivor's a game that's layered. It's like I'm an ogre. I've been layers. You peel them back, and like the number of layers in a returning cast season are so much deeper because every conversation also carries the weight of every conversation they've had before, or every game they've played before in a way that, you know, that's why I hope there's more returning seasons. I'd love to go back out there, but if I don't, like, it's just more fun because you know the players. And you get these moments and yeah, I just keep going back to the fact that these challenges go the other way. That coin lands on tails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brutal, bro. Oh man. Yeah. We'd be having a very different conversation right now and my ranking system would be changed. So you bring up a good point. I like that you're looking at it from that lens. Blake, what's up, dude? Sorry. I'm yapping.
Two things, one quick. And then one, I did some research. So we'll do. Oh, wow. A denouement for Stephanie LaGrosse's Survivor career. But I think one thing that just showed up in the chat. So yes, I forgot about that. I think because Rick Devins said, I'm going to tell you about this idol. It's the pocket square idol. I lied to all of you. I think because he did that, his words at a tribal isn't just a normal Hail Mary. It's a layered approach. Of I told you this, I literally have nothing. I'm telling you how much I don't have anything. And if I go ahead and point to everyone's pocket and go, they're either a vote against you or they're a vote for you, or they're a stealer or they're a idol or they're whatever. This is a simple math problem for you. I think that only works because he laid the groundwork with the other thing. And now here's the denouement for the Gross Boys. For as much as a fan as you can be about Stephanie LaGrosse, it's time to go through her four defeats at the hands of not the fans, but Ceree Fields.
Wait, hang on, Blake. Hang on. We got to put this up. Who was it? St. Clifford said it. Stephanie can't count. She said this was her fourth time getting voted out. Is that
fourth time getting voted out of Survivor is wrong, but maybe her fourth time getting voted out by Cerise specifically is actually true, and she got it tricked. Because her first time around, they met each other on Heroes versus Villains. We're on the Heroes tribe. Let's get her rid of Sugar. That's just one bad one. But then the second vote, she loses again. James is like, it's probably Stephanie. She was on that Yulong tribe. Get her out of here. And it was like, no, Suri, help me out. And Suri was like, I'm fine voting out Stephanie. So that's one. Then they go to Snake in the Grass. And Snake in the Grass is a mini mole game with four people. And it's Suri, Stephanie Grossa, and someone else and someone else. And they all are like, I've played with Stephanie before, even though it was like 2 weeks. I know exactly what she's like. It was two rounds. And they all go, Stephanie, you're the mole, right? And she loses money and she goes away. Suri wins. Great, great, great. Then there's Traitors is the third one. Traitors, oh, we've worked together. We've been on two shows together. Suri's one of my best friends in real life. Suri's like, okay, I can drag Stephanie to the end. She's never going to think sideways of me. I'm going to take her to final eight and straight up kill her because I'm a traitor. I can kill people. But I take her all the way to the end. Everybody knows that she's my friend. I'm going to be sad that she goes. That's my one of my last smokescreen things. Stephanie gone. Suri gets 200 grand. And now this final time is hands in the fan. You know, Stephanie, this person has gotten the better of you three times. This is a time where you need to know, how am I going to maneuver around Suri? Because it certainly didn't feel like you were going to final three with her. So if you weren't taking her to final three, Stephanie, how did you get outmaneuvered again and not have a game plan to get rid of her? I think it's one of those, like, just as much as I'm going to dog Joe for, like, how do you think you're going to win in the end? Stephanie, what was your plan to get to final three? Because it didn't really seem, it seemed like she was meandering. And I think that is another layer of that Rizzo thing, is not just you got to tell us what you're doing. It's like almost disappointment of, like, this is your second, third, fourth chance of Survivor. Like, how did you not, like, okay, in Guatemala, I did this wrong. In Heroes versus Villains, I did this. But in Palau is where I'm at right now. Like, in my Palau mind, what do I need to do? And I didn't think Stephanie was going to go home at 10. Stephanie got last place in the immunity challenge, and it wasn't close. They still voted her out. It's like, how is that the worst day of your Survivor career? And your thing was, somebody goes, why would you tell somebody you're trying to vote out that you have an advantage and you don't have a snap back? Is like, what was your plan? How rusty are you? It didn't feel like you were rusty. I was bragging about how well she was kicking ass in challenges. She was making it through. She was dynamite through a tribal where you're like, now I'm wondering, is there a Zoom alliance that kind of helped you out there? That, like, that kind of makes a little more sense to me, that, which kind of sucks. But, like, how did you not, here's my people and we should vote out Suri and I'm dead ass, we're not telling anybody that would tell her. How is that not how that went last night?
I think what happened this time around with Stephanie is Stephanie became a Survivor icon for being bad at Survivor. Like, that was what made her an icon the first time around.
Two seasons of being bad.
Yeah, like, Oolong, but really, like, Oolong, she became America's sweetheart because she was the last one standing. Like, her tribe sucked, and she was the best of the suck. Like, she survived it, and that was cool. She didn't do anything, like, that great on that season. She did in the early portions to get in with Bobby John, to get in with James, to get in with Ibrahim. But, like, she didn't do that much. She just happened to be a guy's girl. And that worked out for her because it was a tribe that just was decimated and all the women got voted out and she was able to align with the three guys and then keep going through the game. Then she comes out and plays Guatemala. We'd never seen a captain type season. And Stephanie gets to the end and she loses 6-1 to a winner that many people consider to be a bottom tier winner of Survivor. And then she comes out on Heroes Villains, which is a bunch of all-stars, and the game did move too fast for her. And we see her go out in 19th place. And I think on this season, it's like I think Stephanie, from like a TV standpoint, is fine. There's a reason she keeps coming back and playing game shows. It's because people like her. And there is something that is like there's an aura about her. Like when you meet her, when you're around her, you're like, oh, okay. Like this is who Stephanie is. I get it. But the problem is she has the old school mind for Survivor. She does not have the new school mind for Survivor at all. She didn't adapt. She was playing Survivor Palau and Survivor Guatemala. And it was a strategy that probably wasn't going to win her the game back then, but it definitely couldn't win her the game in season 50. The only way she would have won is if she sat at the end next to Joe and I don't maybe it had to be two new era people. She doesn't beat any of the old schoolers. So,
yeah, I give a lot of credit to the players that are coming on 50 because I think a lot of when you're hungry and when you're tired, you may come in thinking I'm going to play differently. I'm going to be really mindful. I'm going to be self-aware, but you're going against, I don't know how old Steph is. I'm 36. So I was like, if I'm in that shoe, I'm going against 36 years of habits and just instinct. And sometimes when you're really hungry, you have nothing in the tank. If you have a full tank, it's very easy to fight what your brain naturally wants to do and that you know is wrong because it hasn't worked in the past. But now you're playing again. And like, so I give some grace to it, but yeah, I mean, four times, it's like, oh man, it's tough, you know? And so I can empathize for sure as someone that's played before. And I'd like to say, if I ever was to do it again, I would have a chance to go against the Ram instincts a little bit that maybe led to my downfall. But, that's what makes, I think, Survivor really interesting mm-hmm. and dynamic. And, but yeah,
go ahead.
Oh no, you go ahead.
I was just gonna say, you're seeing it from somebody like Jonathan, who is really pushing hard to change who he is. And I think is doing a good job with it. And then you're seeing like Stephanie and Joe make the same mistakes. And even Devin's, like, for as much as we're glazing him, as you keep saying, we sit here and we watch Devin's and everybody loves Devin's. Devin's is doing the same shit that got him in trouble the first time he
Devin's
played.
Devin's is like, not going to win Survivor.
Devin's can never win Survivor, but he's super entertaining. So it's more forgiving than Joe or Stephanie. Joe and Stephanie frustrate us because it's like, you're playing so safe. What's your plan to win? Devin's doesn't frustrate us as much, but I sit there and I watch and I go, what is your plan to win, Devin's? Like, what is it? St. Cliffo here, Blake, you put it up.
Oh, if not for the Gross Boys bit, I would say Stephanie was a bad casting choice. That's the magic of Blake, baby.
Steven, we need a shirt that's just with that dance with Blake and like his beard and everything, and it just says Gross Boys. That's it. Yeah, that's the Gross Boys dance. That's it. We're disgusting. I know. And that was imagine how good that would look on a shirt and it just says Gross Boys. Nobody would know what the hell that means, and we would all know it was a Survivor reference that Blake made up. But people would be like, I'd buy that shirt. There's people out there who'd be like, I want to be a Gross Boy. I don't know what it means, but I want to be.
They dance at all the Ron Clark events. Provocative.
I don't know what it means. It's provocative. I'm going to get it tattooed here and here.
Yeah.
All my future lovers are going to be like, what is that? And I'll be like, yeah.
Steven, when you go on Survivor again and there's 24 people, do you just get right back on the plane?
Wait, sorry, say that again. Am I going to get right back on the plane?
24 like people, leave. Like, if you go on an all-star season, they already put 24 people on this one. I don't personally think they should ever do 24 again. I also think if I got to play Survivor and it was 12 on 12 or 6v6v6v6, I would quit. I would go, I can't beat 23 fucking people on this show, Jeff. I can only hear 15.
I would go out, dude.
I was just going to say yesterday, I'm going to say it's good. It's really quick. Yesterday, everybody who's left in the game beat as many people as Richard Hatch beat in season one. So go ahead, Steven.
No, I mean, that's a good point. I was going to say, I don't think there's a single person that's ever played Survivor that did not think they could win. Even some of the more people that are goats and they don't realize it. Like everyone goes out there to play in their own way. And that's what makes it so interesting is like some people come out and they think they're playing a really good game and they're out of touch. And that's very entertaining from a viewer perspective, frustrating if you're working with those type of people. But like at the other side of the coin, yeah, like I don't know. If I went out there, I would not turn. I'd be like, all right, well, let's fucking go. My whole strategy on 49 had to change a little bit once I got to the merge and I realized that I was a bigger target than I realized. And so I leaned into this really stupid space analogy that I made about being a supermassive black hole. I'm going to be the big gravitational center of the galaxy. I know. Blake's like, oh, not for the space.
Not the analogy, I get it.
Enough of it, dude. I know. What's funny, everyone's like, oh my God, dude, Steven, with the analogies, the kangaroo thing. That's kind of how I talk in person. And I asked my girlfriend, I was like, did I say that more than I normally did? And she was like, no, you kind of talk like that sometimes. Like you're a fortune.
Has there been growth or do you still do it? Like you had to cringe, right?
I cringed watching some of the things that I said. Cause like, it's funny, like you're out there and it's so concentrated and hyper, but you forget most of what is said in confessional. So every time we're watching an episode, it's kind of like rewatching. I'm like, oh, I forgot I said that. Or like, you know, cause you say so many things. And, the big thing for me was it's good. Like I like reading the negative comments. I think it's healthy to take criticism and get roasted because that's how you grow. And so people were like, don't read the comments, don't read it. And I was like, nah, man, a lot of them are unfortunately incredibly funny. Dude, Twitter is like it can be very toxic, but they said some of the funniest things about me. But yeah, like the reason I speak in metaphors in general was like my profession, I work as a rocket scientist with NASA and stuff, but I also work a lot with people that don't have that same engineering background. And so I'm trying to convince them like, this is worth funding. This is valuable. So I come up with ways to take these ideas and explain them in a way that someone that doesn't have my educational background can follow. And yeah, it's Survivor. Like I said, I'm hungry and I'm tired. And I leaned back into the metaphors, man. I thought the kangaroo thing was so funny, and I watched it and I was like, I'm gonna get some heat for this. It's probably well deserved. But if
full disclosure, I think I called you the whitest white guy that's ever white guyed on Survivor. Just so milk, if you loved what you're drinking doing milk, and ever like... see that later, my bad. Yeah.
I think Blake's exact words after the shins in the dark room was that guy's never allowed on our podcast. Delete his number. He should never have been cast. Like if you go back and listen to that Digging Deeper, I'm sure Blake said nothing but things about like ram him off the island, get him out of here. We don't need him. Dude, but here you are, and look at this. Look at you. You made it.
You know what? I banged my shins. I banged my ego, but you get up and you keep going. You see 24 people getting off that plane and you're like, hell yeah. But I'm going to be honest. This is going to make me look really silly and dumb, but I thought I fucking ate with that line. I was like, that's so funny. I just put it on the spot. And I was like, this is so hilarious. And then nobody on the jury reacted. Nobody sitting around me reacted. Jeff was like, Jeff kind of had a delayed pause and a smile. And I was like, oh my God. Then I asked people after, I was like, did you guys hear? They just didn't hear what maybe they're sparing my feelings. They told me, we didn't hear what you said. I'm like, you can be honest. It wasn't a great joke.
Sage was honest.
Sage, actually, that's one of the reasons I love her, dude. She will tell it to you straight. She doesn't want to hug you. She's not going to hug you. You make a dumb joke. She doesn't she's like your shin joke.
Yeah, she'd be like, that's dumb. Last thing I want to ask here before we go, because now we're almost at an hour and a half, and Blake is super excited because we're recording nothing but Second Chance after this. And Will's texting me being like, where are you? Which is funny because normally we're texting Will being like, where the hell are you? But I have to ask this. For the first time since Jenna Lewis was booted from the game, there are more new era people than old school people. Do you think that there is the potential the new era people try to run this to the end, realizing that they probably can't beat Devin's? They probably can't beat Suri. They probably can't beat Ozzy. Maybe they can beat Aubrey, but probably not. And do you think they realize that their best bet is to team up as a group of five and vote out those four people? Because then if you get the final five, any of you can win, as opposed to if you get the final, like you don't need to keep Suri and Ozzy and Devin's around anymore as targets. This is the time to get rid of them because all five of you would then be on an even playing field. Do you think that that's going to happen? Do you think that's even going through their minds?
I think it's going to go through someone's mind, and it's going to be the person who's on the chopping block, and they're going to come to this realization, Phil, that you just brought up, which is a good point. It's you're always, when you're at the bottom, you're looking for anything that could unite you with people that you haven't been working with before. You're looking to bring some big revelation that they haven't thought of, like, hey, and what you just said, it makes total logical sense. But I do think that if I'm Rizzo, there's no way I'm flipping on Ozzy and Sarid. Those are the two biggest shields. They are probably going to take hits before anyone puts their sights on Rizzo. And I give him credit for that. Like, people might look at that and be like, you're doing like an Allie Gabler type strategy. But I mean, to give Rizzo credit, he only had 9 days between 49 and 50, and he's changed things up. I think I'm not trying to speak on his behalf, but I have to imagine he got there and realized pretty quickly that the same antics that he pulled on 49 aren't going to land on a returning season where people, this isn't their first time playing. They're used to the big flashy personalities, the big flashy moves, and that's just going to put a bigger target on him. So I think he's been doing really great. I think if someone comes up to Rizzo, like, I don't know, like he probably is like, why would I do that?
When does he want to get rid of them though? Cause he's got to know he can't beat those two.
I agree. I was actually just thinking about this yesterday. I'm like, Rizzo's playing a really good game. I think he's setting himself up for a deep run, but a deep run is only as good as like what you can say in your final tribal. And so I think at a certain point, I guarantee you, knowing Rizzo, he's thinking this. He's been thinking about it the whole time. What's going to be my, how am I going to build my resume? Like, he knows he's going to have to take shots. And like, to Rizzo's credit, I mean, he aligned with really, you know, he had a trio that was really strong. And luckily, like the big reason I think they decimated our seven person alliance was like, they were loyal to the soil. They did not get paranoid. They did not flip on each other in a way that I think some of us were a little bit, you know, we just, and anyway, where I'm going with this is I think Rizzo, one of the best qualities he has is aligning with people that are good at the game that don't break under pressure. So he's the best. My favorite moment of the episode last night was Cerise sitting in the hammock and Steph came up and said the thing and she goes, mm-hmm. That was the mm-hmm that could echo in the ether forever because that was I read your bullshit and I'm not going to fall for it. And I'm going to let you keep talking to fill this uncomfortable gap of silence with, you know, and dig yourself deeper. And that's what makes Cerise so powerful. And I mean, obviously Rizzo, he's a student of the game. He knows more about Survivor than probably anyone I've ever met. And I think even though it's not a flashy game, we haven't seen a lot of the things he's doing. I think there's some credit that needs to be given to him for going back to back. And he's changed his tactics pretty dramatically from what, at least mm-hmm. what I saw when I played out there. And I give him a lot of credit for that. But I do think that those subtle things don't win over a jury. You know, they need to see it. And like, I felt that way too. I got to the end. I was like, people, like, they like me. I could be like Ty. They like me. I was like, people are laughing at my jokes on the jury. A lot of Hinu people on the jury. I'm like, what the hell have I done? So I got this advantage and I thought that would be my big thing. But, you know, yeah.
At any point when you were on 49 and it just popped in my head, did Rizzo ever say his Rizzo May? I feel like that could have maybe taken him to the next level of Rizzo and resume put together in front of a jury. Man. It would just,
man, if he's watching this right now, you know, he's going to,
how did I not do that?
The puns, man, dude, I'm the dad joke. That was part of my strategy was coming out like a golden retriever. I was like, I'm going to tell people I do rocket science, but I'm going to balance it out with being a freaking goofball. And you know, Rizzo, I think probably had a very similar strategy. I think he's very self-aware. And that's the thing that you don't pick up on the edit because you just see these little highlights of it. But one thing I picked on pretty quickly was like, yes, he's goofy. Yes, he's obnoxious, whatever. But like, he knows it. He's not like, I don't know. It's just so fucking funny to like think back to it. But Rizzo needs to do something though. Like you need to have something below, you know, more than just being gifted an idol from Genevieve and being smart about who you choose to work with and not putting yourself out there to put a target on your back. He's going to have to make a move. And I'm looking forward to seeing like what he pulls out of his sleeve. Cause he's a kid that's thinking about it all the time.
He knows he's a zero vote finalist against Ozzy and Sari. If he goes to the final three with them, he knows
it. Exactly. He's aware. He's aware. He knows where he's at. He knows.
But he's also smart enough to realize it's a 24 person game. I got to make my move when I need to. And that's what Aubrey said yesterday. I lost because Michelle made moves late. I need to make moves late. And I think on a season as long as this one, making moves late is the better thing. So, Steven, Last thing here, John Millsip asks, who's Survivor's favorite newscaster? Did you hear this last night?
Who was Survivor's favorite?
Did you hear this last night? It was Jeff called Rick Devin's Survivor's favorite newscaster, not Savannah Louie. How's that feel?
How does that feel to me?
Yeah. 49, no love, huh? What the hell?
No, well, here's my thing is Savannah's a good player, dude. Like, and she deserved to be on 50. And I was a little bummed to see her go as soon as she did. Although I think that I kind of felt like, dang, anyone coming from 49 is going to have a tough time. So she survived one vote. That was pretty good. But yeah, I don't know. A really quick, funny story is I give Christina a lot of credit for this read. She was the first person that ever came up to me and said, I'm pretty sure Savannah is a newscaster lying about her profession. I was like, that's out of pocket. Why? And she's like, the way that she says things sometimes, like when you read a parchment, mm-hmm. when like an advantage, and she was just so articulate. She'd be like, bum, 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 bum. Like she had this cadence that was just so like more polished than anyone. And like the confidence and like, it was like, and the weather today, or, and then here over in the metropolitan, somebody did murmur, murmur. And like, it was just like, she would talk normal and then like read something and bam. So Christina gets a lot of credit for clocking that right away. Devin's, I think that's just kind of how he is, man. Like he doesn't seem like he changes his cadence in that way to flip it on. So maybe Devin's gets it just because that's just like, dude, I met him in person. He's very charismatic in the way that he is when he's reading things off. But yeah, I don't know. Savannah, how do you feel about that out there? That I didn't register that.
I think Rizzo even said poor Savannah or something like that. Like, I think he said something like that on the episode, and it was funny. It was like a little aside, but I just thought that was a, you know, a fun
Savannah's
little
over
note.
There counting her $1 million. She's like, okay, yeah, make fun of me for
yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, Rick, how are you doing, buddy? Yeah.
With the exactly. million. Dude, yeah.
She's chilling.
That was funny, though.
Well, Steven, this was a pleasure. This was a good conversation. Well done. Hour and a half of pure joy for everybody to listen to here. We got through the Gross Boys. We got through all of it. And we're down to the final nine, and that's it. We got 3 episodes left of Survivor.
There's only Steven, 3 episodes left.
Steven, are you doing any other podcasts throughout the rest of the year? Are you done?
You know, I've got one more in the books, and it's just a lot of fun. Like, that's been one of the coolest things about coming from the game. Being able to watch two people I played with, it's very fun being on the other side of it. And like, especially because I worked against them. So I know their tactics and I've been on the receiving side of it, and they're good players. And it's cool to see them evolve. So that's been really fun. But also getting a chance to come here, offer my perspective as someone that actually was there with them, that saw it firsthand. And I think, you know, there's only so much time, especially like you said, there are 24 players. There's only so much runtime in the episodes. I know some of them are longer, but you sometimes miss out on these little moments that, to me, as someone that played with Rizzo and Savannah, I was not surprised they got called back to play again. And I think it was very well deserved. And I was really excited to see them. Of course, I'm like, damn, why wasn't it me? But everyone does. Like I said, everyone goes in to Survivor thinking they're the main character. They're going to win. Because if you don't have that mentality, you're going to lose. And mm-hmm. that's what makes them so fun is those are two players that come out swinging. And it's been really fun to like offer my little tidbits of a sideline armchair coach analysis and get to offer that perspective to their gameplay. Cause I think it's been fun, but yeah, thanks for having me on. Like I said, I watched a lot of you guys throughout the years. And then of course, before I went on 49, I was like, you guys have some good strategic insights. You guys even tonight brought up things. I was like, damn it. You know, you guys bring up really good things that I
only
didn't
we had good personalities, we could get on the fucking show, man.
You just got a Mr. Beast tattooed across your chest, oh, man. And say
what's crazy is
17 times in a tribal council.
Could've I do have Mr. Beast. Out. I do have it tattooed across my chest, and I still didn't get on the show.
Oh my God.
Damn, that's hell. The problem.
I'm
I know.
Sorry, man.
I have Rizgod tattooed on my upper back. So it's crazy, but here we are. Well, anyway,
something now.
Yeah, finally, right? I know. Rizgod doesn't even have
I lost a bet. Yeah, it wasn't Will.
Yeah, I won a bet. That was the crazy part. I won mine. Yeah, anyway. All right, well, Steven, this was a pleasure. Everybody, thank you for listening. Like this video, subscribe to the channel, patreon.com/thespecialist. Go over there and join. I think we just hit 400 patrons. Not all of them pay, but we just hit 400 patrons. Big deal. So that's pretty cool. So thank you for being over there. That makes it worthwhile when we're about to do a nice little like 2.5 hour, 2 hour deep dive here tonight in the second chance. Blake already is rolling his eyes and not happy. Tomorrow night, John and McKenna will be doing Survivor Rewind. Sunday, I got Saul at 4 p.m. Eastern time. I got to remember my times now because now I'm on the West Coast, so I'm confused. And then on Tuesday, I'll be live with Kyle Durrett from Matt Chat, who also does our Amazing Race podcast with McKenna. And then Wednesday, we recap it again. So thank you all so much for listening. Crazy weeks ahead. Don't worry. Only 3 episodes left. Can't wait to get into it more. And Steven, thank you for being here. See everybody next time.
Thank you for having me. It was great. Take care.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.